All right, we are here. I am going to call to order the Planning Commission regular meeting of Thursday, May 1st. Carla, will you do roll call?
Yes, Chair Brinson.
I am here.
Thank you. Commissioner Lynn?
Here.
Vice Chair Mosier?
Here.
Commissioner Povich?
Here.
Thank you. We have Commissioner Cabe, Commissioner Fry, and Commissioner Hadley, which are all absent with notice. So, thank you.
Okay. All right, move to approval of the agenda. Anyone? Agenda is approved. Moving to approval of the meeting minutes. Does anyone have comments?
Approved.
That's my job.
Oh, sorry. Got a little excited.
All right. Carla, do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
We don't have anyone signed up. I did forward a written comment earlier, but that's it for today.
We got it. Thank you. All right, then we will go straight to the study item, development code amendments to eliminate parking minimums citywide. Take it away.
Thank you. So we'll have to decide how we want to kind of go through these amendments, but I'll start with kind of a brief PowerPoint. So we'll kind of review the potential changes. Staff had presented the commission some questions in your staff report, and we can go through those with some discussion and then maybe some direction when we come back. If there's any changes that you want for the next meeting to talk about these amendments in June. So staff was here April 3rd, kind of introduced the subject, and we received direction from you, commission, and also the council about where these would apply. There was some issues about parking enforcement that would come up. We asked questions about parking and circulation management, minimum parking requirements for certain uses, and then accessible parking and electric vehicle parking. So we got direction in there. We kind of incorporated those changes in the document in your staff report, but we'll go over those. So there's basically like six sub chapters for these code amendments, the first being the purpose section in 2050 380. So, you know, based on the guidance from the council and commission, staff tried to revise those purpose statements to emphasize flexibility, safety, and the environment over convenience and efficiency of the city's parking facilities. In addition, staff is proposing to add statements regarding reduction of hardscape to further the city's climate goals. The next subchapter has to do with design review, and this is building in an administrative design review process in order to change certain requirements that we could approve administratively if someone proposes parking facilities that may not necessarily abide by the code but meet the intended purposes and is actually comes out as a better product. We propose that we could do that. We could do that with the director's approval and not have to go back through code amendments or like, you know, any harder processes. The next subchapter has to do with the minimum parking requirements, and this is kind of the meat of the section, and this is proposed to be cut. This is those required parking spaces for the uses, and so direction was clear to kind of get rid of those, so that section is proposed to be fully cut, though. We should mention that we've researched other jurisdictions that have reduced parking requirements and seen what they were doing with ADA accessible parking, what they were requiring, and the bulk of those cities were just relying on what the building code requires for ADA parking. There wasn't anything built into those codes that were exceptional or was over what was already required in the building code. So I think that's kind of another question to ask the commission is if the city wants to go above and beyond what's required in the building code. If so, then this section is kind of where that would live. But just to kind of point that out to you, that we didn't see anything in other codes, Spokane, other jurisdictions that have done this. There isn't any extra for accessible parking. The next section has to do with parking reduction. So if the previous section is cut, this section is no longer needed. So that's proposed to be cut as well. Parking design, there is a lot of difference kind of topics within this subchapter. Kind of the highlights is that, you know, if people provide parking areas, and it must be on an approved parking surface, so hardscape surface, pavers, or grass blocks, things like that. The parking may be located on site, or if it's off site, there isn't any distance requirements. Where it was, if you had a commercial business, parking had to be within a certain number of feet within that business, so that kind of those regulations are being struck from the code. There's parking stall and aisle dimensions. There's a lot of graphs and figures within the subchapter. Will have to be revised. That'll take a little bit more time because, you know, I'm not a graphic designer, so I'll have to pull some, update that with people who know what they're doing there, so it looks nice and pretty. And then loading areas. So this was a point that was brought up by council and commission about where loading areas should be. Should they be provided on site or within the right of way? So staff has kind of looked at the two tables we have in there, provided some clarifications about loading zones for residential and non-residential uses. But this topic will be more fully refined going forward as we work with Public Works to see how we can do that curb management type things. And then the last section has to do with access and circulation, and really the major changes involve drive-through businesses. So staff's proposing to consolidate a number of drive-through services into one category, and then also amending the minimum number of stacking spaces per site, because there's different stacking based on different uses, and we kind of don't want to get into, you know, kind of regulate that anymore, just have one standard. So at this, so I have a number of discussion questions, but would you want to look at those now, or should we kind of walk through the actual changes in the Word document? I can pull that up and look at what's being struck and what's being added. It's up to you. I mean, you can kind of like scroll through the code and see if
do you all want to go through it line by line, or do you want to go to the discussion questions first?
I was kind of envisioning maybe like a working kind of, if you weren't
however you would wish to bring us along,
then I could, you know, amend it on the fly. If not,
I have no preference. I'm fine doing just the questions first if we want to start there, since those are easy. But maybe they're
okay.
Easy.
I mean,
maybe oversimplifying.
Yeah, this will inform kind of those amendments when they come back through with you. Or if not, if you're fine with the code the way it is, then no changes will be made. But yeah, we can start with the questions. This is the first question in your staff report, is looking at other jurisdictions, there have been cities that have set a maximum number of parking spots. So we're getting rid of minimum, but there's also those cities that don't want to see seas of parking depending on the use. So that's a question for the commission. Should we be looking at maximum parking requirements, maximum number of spaces for use? Do you want Costco to build a 1,000 stall parking garage?
Of the cities that have done it, like I'm thinking of that are more connected metropolitan city, shall we say? Like, Bellingham and Spokane have done it, but they're kind of independent in some ways.
But right, and they tend to be, more confined with space and maybe smaller.
Yeah, so did they have, how did, like, Spokane treat maximums? I can't recall. I read it in the packet. No, I don't remember.
I don't either. For maximums, and it's more, I don't know if Spokane has a lot of parking existing, and it might have been those Oregon, like Beaverton cities, where they've put a maximum just so they have that land for development of buildings and not parking. So.
I mean, I guess I'm
just a question if we should consider it or not going forward, and then we could, yeah.
My thought is we don't have that type of sprawl land to within our city. Where can we think of a possibility that people will want to put a lot of parking?
I mean, I think if you think of like a car dealership, if it got torn down and became a big box store, would we want to limit that? Like as like a redevelopment thing, I think is how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it could be some like redevelopment at around Fir Crest, or it could be But you're right. There isn't a lot of space that's raw land or that's undeveloped.
I think for me, I'm not quite sure how we would I don't have enough information or knowledge to know how to arrive at a maximum. So I'm not sure how other jurisdictions have done it. So that's sort of giving me pause of, I don't know how it works.
If I can jump in, I think that's a challenge of the, I think that'd be one trade-off to consider as we're eliminating minimums, which arguably in many cases are like arbitrarily set. And then we'd be doing that with a maximum potentially. But it could, eliminate. It's sort of a behavioral shift we're trying to influence, whereby if there's less parking, then theoretically someone might, it's going to be more difficult to find a parking spot, perhaps forcing a different mode of transportation. It's sort of the theory behind that. But it is imposing, I guess, a couple of downsides. Yeah, one is how do you set the maximum? Two is it's a layer of now administrative review that we're doing. So where we've always been reviewing minimums, we're now reviewing maximums. And so as opposed to just not having any parking requirements at all, and it's just whatever a development is providing.
Yeah, I think I'm with Leslie. I feel like, parking minimums were already kind of capricious in the way they've set them, that we've resulted in overparking, but I don't think we know enough to set a maximum. I'd rather look at, like, when we talk about parking design, like, do we actually try to enforce, like, more walking path, like, dedicated walking paths through parking lots or things like that, because you're at that point minimizing land area and you're still somewhat encouraging the type of mobility that you're trying to facilitate.
That's sort of my line of thought. And I was thinking, so now that we don't have a minimum requirement, and so are those landscape requirement or buffer requirement for parking, is that still valid? I mean, how do we deal with those type? Do we keep that, or we even strengthen that portion to control the kind of a maximum parking? You want more parking, you plant more trees, you have more green space to compensate for the parking. Then it becomes kind of a balance, and it won't make sense for them for whoever to develop a parking lot.
Yeah, because if parking is provided, then it does kick you in. There's parking lot landscaping requirements. There's like buffers and you have to hide the frontage parking with either walls, trellises, landscaping. So all those landscape design things are there.
I'm thinking like the how many contiguous cars you can have before you have a break or something that usually have an effect on not wanting to have too many parking space.
Well, to kind of combine what the two of you have said, right? You make sure that you have the landscaping and the walking paths to make it so that you don't walk through this huge parking lot. And that in its own will decrease the amount of parking spots. So then it becomes irrelevant, not quite irrelevant, but it's really hard to do a hypothetical, right? So if a car dealership is torn down, okay, so if it's an apartment, if it's a big box store, I mean, there's just too many hypotheticals and variables to decide maximums. Mm-hmm. With the exception, the only thing that I could think of as an exception would be Fergrest. Just because the plot of land is just so vast. Mm-hmm. That I think that, you know, maybe instead of having a code about maximum parking for areas like Fergrest or others, maybe you say if you develop this large piece, then you need to come back to the city and talk to everybody, right? Talk to Parks and Rec, talk to the water, talk to everyone and get a plan. So that wouldn't be a hypothetical plan, but we'd be able to kind of rein in those huge projects.
I think one thing I'm thinking about from this is sort of development finance and sort of financial feasibility. I think there's financial pressure. So there's the market pressure of providing enough parking, right? That's one part of the equation. But on the other side, for every bit of land you're using for parking, you're not creating income generating space. So there's sort of a balancing act that goes on there. And in the shorter term, if we were to overpark, that's just a holding space for future development, right? Parking eventually becomes something else as cities transform. So it's just in my head, it's sort of thinking through, I like the idea of pedestrian paths and sort of making it a little bit more expensive to develop the parking that is no longer required to make sure that we're creating those walkable spaces that we want. But I don't know that a maximum is necessary in my sort of thinking about it, because I think there are other ways in which that's going to be constrained.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. So this provision currently in the code have a limit of cars, trucks, buses, RVs, whatever you can have on a single family lot before was, you know, 6 + 2 boats, RVs. Now we have middle housing. Should we be looking at, you know, codes to limit how many vehicles you have outside stored on your property? This might be just something that's maybe it won't be a worry just because things will be, but it's there now. So we're kind of wondering what we need to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think your last point is the kind of like as we were talking about with maximums and just like traffic or like parking management plans, like it becomes really hard to administer them. And I mean, even the understanding of a lot is so difficult. I could see keeping it in if you look at it, a lot as solely a single family home, because we are, like, if you think of a greater development, we are limited in impervious area anyway, so that's already inherently limiting it. We lowered it with middle housing in some zones. Right. Mm-hmm. So we've already kind of inherently limited what you can put on a site, but I could still see a lot of big lots. Like, that we do have a number of existing single family homes that still comprise a large land area. So I think if you could word the sentences of, like, if used as a single family lot or something. Mm. Or if the lot's over X number of square feet or something like that, just to put some limiter, but otherwise, also, if it's challenging to administer, I would just assume get rid of it.
It also feels like a little bit of a protection for worst case scenario. If there's no limit and there is an egregious case, there's no enforcement authority the city has to address that egregious case. If it's there but it's never used because there's nothing that's egregious.
We run into it for like junk code enforcement, junk
right.
vehicle, unlicensed vehicles, things like that that are illegally parked there, inoperable, or
right.
It's like a property maintenance code issue. But the other thing is if you're developing fourplexes, sixplexes, and then they provide parking, you know, we're going to run into a problem where you can't have, well, it may, those limits may, you know, come into effect. It depends on, you know, what's being developed there and where that parking's located, if it's a surface lot or, you know, if they're not in garages.
Are you suggesting that if, I just need to do the math in my head, so if you have a fourplex and this applied to said fourplex, that wouldn't be two cars per townhouse. That would be only one and a half, if I did the math.
If there were, I believe it's outside.
If you yeah. stuck this to the parcel, which is no longer a thing that we're kind of contemplating, which is what gets back to your point of, it only really applies if you're talking about a single dwelling unit.
Yeah, I think with the paradigm shift with middle housing, you're right. This, it's sort of turned on its head, and we almost need to think about it like as a, like where is that parking assigned, or like whose parking it is, right?
Right.
Because yeah, if you have
if they provide it right, because they don't have, I mean, it doesn't require parking.
Yeah, I mean, I do suspect this was either written in or as a carryover from incorporation days to limit
oh, yeah.
the number of vehicles. No one
yeah.
wants to live next to the lot that's got like 12 vehicles parked on the front lawn, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is why it feels like a code enforcement issue
yeah.
rather than a development standard situation, which is why I think there needs to be a protection, but
mm-hmm.
thinking about how to word it so that it applies to the new paradigm is
yeah.
a... requires some more thinking.
It is too in the development code, in the code enforcement provisions.
In both
in
places.
2037.
Okay.
Julie?
So. Not the numbers, but the everything else. For
like the junk vehicles
yeah, junk,
and
property
yeah.
maintenance,
yeah.
junk vehicles.
So where my head goes is if you have limited street parking now because you don't have parking on the lot, and you have somebody who decides that they're going to park five vehicles on the street, and now nobody has any room to park anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Does this person get in trouble? Can we do anything
mm-hmm.
about this? Or can he just park his boats, non-working vehicles on the street because you're going to allow street parking?
Not if they have to be operable, licensed vehicles. So.
Shoreline have the move every 72 hours requirement if you're on the street?
Yeah, so when you're parking in the right-of-way, it becomes an enforcement issue. So yeah, that's where, and we now have a parking enforcement program, so we have a staff person dedicated to parking enforcement, and so that would be a component and something to mitigate that concern is if you're, you know, you can't just park your vehicle in the right-of-way endlessly. It needs to be moving and operable and everything. I'm less certain on RVs and boats and things that are, like, not your everyday vehicles. And so that's, I don't
I'm
know,
not,
Steve,
I'm
if
not,
you're...
I'm not certain what...
So we could do a little more research maybe around this. And I guess to your point on the protections, like what's... Yeah. Not trying to go overboard and try to regulate something out of fear, but
right.
have something as a stopgap.
Yeah.
I like that because that's what my worry is that you're going to get, you know,
mm-hmm.
We have two duplexes on our street and they each have like six cars, right? And so I think if we had more of those on our street, could be a little bit of a problem. So I like the protection part, right? It's not something that we're going to go do unless, you know, somebody's doing something egregious.
Yeah.
the idea that it's sort of always a good idea to have something to point to, even if you don't think it's going to be used, but if the thing you didn't expect happens.
People always do what you say they won't.
I mean, I think to that point, it may be good to look at parking enforcement, but from what you're actually allowed to park on the right of way in the instance of street parking.
Yeah, and
like,
bringing that
I can see like now, boats, yeah. That seems like you obviously would not want someone to park that. You shouldn't allow people to park their boat in the right of way. And then likewise, I mean, recreational vehicles, but maybe it's like you have to, it's like yeah, it Seattle has like guest passes for residential parking zones, but they're a time limited thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you have to move those every, 3 days, like, people aren't moving their boats every 3 days.
Yeah.
So I assume that's a problem.
I could see, to your point of like wanting something enforceable, in the interim between now, where we have lots of single-family homes, and or to say 20 years, I don't know what that is, like you still are going to have a lot of lots with a lot of cars. So I think having that enforcement more of like you can't park on the grass or something like that.
Yeah, it does say you have to park on an approved surface.
Notwithstanding that our right-of-ways are mostly... Yeah. Grass in the city because they're unimproved, but
so. They've become hardscape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's clarity for me. Okay, this is a provision where we've kind of stumbled in the past about if parking's provided, should parking be allowed within property setbacks? Because a lot of the times driveways are in a setback, but our code said you can't park in setbacks, even though your driveway is in the setback. So,
do you have a picture?
It's my house.
No. I don't have one with me, but.
Steve, is this, are you meaning the front setback or the side setback?
Both. Yeah. It's in the let me see what page.
I mean, I think, I mean, the challenge with it is that we don't have alleys, but if you had, if I guess we do have a couple alleys in the city, but hypothetically, like you would, we actually probably want to encourage people in that instance to park in the rear yard setback if you have an alley.
Right.
But conventionally, you're already parking in your front yard setback with the driveway, so that doesn't seem weird. That's actually pretty normal in every city, is that the driveway is your front yard setback. They're kind of
where would you park if you weren't parking in the setback? That's what I that's
you would,
what
park, you would park in your garage, but you would be you would still have the parking surface in, exactly.
Well, yeah, or it would force the driveway to be longer than it would otherwise need to be.
Right? I think the only one that I find challenging was with like a side yard setback. If you think of then you're parking, like, since my house is on a hill, like, you're potentially parking, like, right on the edge of a hill or something like that. Like, I know because my neighbors can park in their side yard setback, they run into our fence all the time. So there's, like, a property damage kind of thing with it. But also, from a non-conformity perspective, everybody's lots would be non-conforming if we said no. And that seems also hard to administer. Whereas if you just allow it, it is what it is.
I think surface water is also a consideration here.
Sure,
so if you're providing asphalt or concrete right up to the edge of your property line, and if you are on any bit of a slope, you've got that runoff just going straight to your neighbor.
Except that we do allow like paver patios and everything else to go to property line as well. But
and impervious paver blocks.
I mean,
true.
I'm also thinking about sort of flexibility with regards to trees and moving things around and all of the ways in which we regulate the site. This one doesn't bother me. I think it should be allowed. With the understanding that I'm still wrapping my head around what we're talking about.
This came up when I built my garage. Because part of my driveway was on the setback.
Mm-hmm.
And so my driveway, I thought my driveway was a certain length and it was actually shorter than it was because of that. At least that's what I was told. Mm-hmm. So I think that we should allow in the setbacks. Unless, of course, it's something like yours where it's a danger.
But it's also such a non-conformity, like it's frustrating, but it's also just like, it could happen anywhere. So like a danger is a perceived danger. Mm-hmm. So it's.
You need a harder fence.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
I have a question. It really, I cannot picture if the driveways are not allowed within setback, how's car going to get in?
This is what
I just cannot picture.
I think it assumes that you have a, it's a, I think isn't the code written though that you're allowed to park in the front yard setback if it is within like a driveway or something, or am I thinking of a different city? There's a weird sentence in there that seems like you can't do it, but then it very clearly says you can't do it.
Yeah, that's the problem, is it's a confusing the way it's stated.
Though I think the thing, to your point, Leslie, about the side yards now is previously our front yard setback was 10 feet or was 20 feet. And then, like, if you're thinking of, like, at least my yard, like, actually there's an additional 10 feet that are from the center line of the road to the actual property line. But so now we're actually decreasing the front yard setback to 10 feet. So the side yard setback is actually more apt to be where you park because we're allowing houses to be built further forward. So you kind of almost have to allow them in the side yards if you don't want to have like a really long driveway or something to get back somewhere.
Yeah, so if you see like I don't know if you can see that on your screen, it's I, parking spaces shall be located outside of any required setbacks provided driveways located and setbacks may be used for parking. So
doesn't that just mean you build a driveway and you park on it?
Exactly.
Like doesn't that like how else would you be parking in the setback?
Does the driveway need to meet setbacks? And like you said, if we're fighting for space now, we want to save trees, maybe we, you know, do allow driveways in the setbacks for parking. Whereas I think the interpretation here is that, yeah, it's...
Actually,
it's something we stumble over.
I think maybe there's a middle, because I'm channeling Andrew's comment, because it's true. We do it to our neighbor, and our neighbor, other neighbor does just because the water goes down, where because of the paved surface, it does trickle down. But we do in the accessory structure part of the code, for at least for the residences, there has to be like a 2 feet setback from the side property line or something like that. So maybe you can park in the side yard, but you have to at least maintain like 2 feet of dirt or something. I think I'm trying to remember what the accessory structure
depends
is.
Depends the size.
Like that.
Sometimes there's no setback, but
yeah.
So like a garden shed under 200 square feet and a certain height. I think it's like either 8 or 10 feet can go right up to the setback.
Yeah.
Part of that's fire separation as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that subsection I mean the way I view that is it's really I think getting to the side setback. It is the way I view that. But you could also allow maybe a really minimal setback, you know,
yeah.
2 feet or whatever it might be.
Michelle, what's a nice planting width? Yeah, it's two. or is three what's the magic number for like successful plants?
3 feet? I've heard it's 3.
I guess another consideration, if you're truly parking there, and let's say there is a fence on the property line, your pavement goes up to the property line, how do you get out of the car, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's just maybe some really practical things to think about too. I don't know that anyone would actually design it to that, but.
Yeah, I just want to point out when exactly like that, because it's actually been used. That location, that two feet, will be used as a pathway. So really, won't be useful for planting.
That's fair.
Yeah. It could be gravel as opposed to pavement. But
yeah.
I think this is one of those. I need a picture. It would be, because the thing that I just occurred to me is, what about parking directly in the front yard across the entire width of the lot? That's something we don't want in that front setback, correct? Like having the street facing part of the parcel be just a row of parking, being a parking lot before you get into it. I feel like during the cottage housing conversation, or some conversation over the last couple of years. We talked around that. I feel like we don't have quite enough information on this one of what the risk versus reality is.
I believe we've got standards now for middle housing and all of the new neighborhood residential zones that get to the parking location so that it isn't front and center, right? So that it's either to the side or to the rear, and when it's up front, that it's screened and landscaped appropriately and everything. So we have some provisions like that. We can definitely bring back some more information about this topic and maybe some basic like site layout concepts of what it could look like in different options.
And some of it, remind me, some of it is actually dictated by the engineering manual too, isn't it? I have a vague recollection that there's like a limit of, you have to have like 40 feet between driveways or something like that. So we're...
Right, so there's another subset of requirement as well.
Yeah. So I wonder if that comes to like also like almost like a maximum curb cut kind of thing. Because yeah, it's true. Right now, because we don't have sidewalks, lots of front yards are...
Right.
Pull-in parking.
And boats are parked.
And boats are parked.
How is that, Stephen? Did you get
what? I'm just looking at, our new NR codes does address some vehicle access and parking areas. So we don't want parking areas between the building and the street, at least over 50% of the lot. So there's a like three or four different design things that you have. So no, you can't have a full width concrete in the front.
Yeah, I think understanding the intersection between what's in code and what this sentence means, sort of from a reality perspective of if we changed it, what's allowed now that wouldn't be allowed, or vice versa. I guess it's what isn't
some
allowed
examples.
Now that would be allowed.
Yeah.
Sort of worst case, if you were to play this out, what's the worst thing that could happen if we changed this?
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't have a sense of that right now.
Okay.
I don't know about.
Yeah, we can bring this one back with some pictures. So it kind of like.
Thank you.
Bringing it back to accessible parkings, do we want more than what the building code requires, or should we just rely on the codes that we have now?
I say rely on the codes.
Okay.
I would agree. I'm worried that we're taking away the minimum, we're removing minimums to think differently about how this is, and I'm worried if we add back in a minimum just for this, we're gonna, one, undo what we did for ground floor non-residential space, where we removed parking because, like, those codes requiring like two parking spots for a coffee shop or some of why our new buildings didn't come with anything in them. And I'm worried that by doing this, we're actually creating a different problem where we'd be requiring maybe two parking lot spots, and then you're still going to have a curb cut, you're still going to have a driveway, you're still going to have parking spots, but they're really limited in use. And it's something I think we should be doing at the street or something. But also, if you're providing a parking lot, there's already code that governs percentages.
Yeah, based on a certain number, right? And certain uses just require it regardless, like, you know, adult family home type, you know.
I think what...
Medical type uses, so yeah.
I think what might be helpful just for sort of public conversation is to know, to have a little bit of detail about what the ADA code in the building code actually says, because we're having this conversation sort of absent of that. I agree with relying on the code, but just maybe for some awareness of like what that means.
Yeah. There's a brief conversation in the staff report, but it's not very detailed.
Okay.
Because like the building code does, it's, you know, it's pages and pages of, if this, then that. And
if you
do this.
In general, a sense of what it provides, or even an example would be.
Okay. Yeah. If you want general, then page 2 of your staff report will have like what types of occupancies require ADA. But
And I'm assuming, because I've seen it in Seattle, that for street, for places that do not, who allow people to park on the street wherever, that if you are somebody who owns a home and you need ADA spots, then you can petition to have an 88 spot on the street in front of your home.
I could check on that.
Yeah. I've seen that in Seattle. So I don't know if that was a fluke, but it would be a nice thing to have if that was the case.
I agree. I think that would be a good way to look at doing it. It's, again, it's using the right of way for the things that we want to go on the right of way.
And I have located the ADA information in the staff report. Thank you, Steve. I just missed it. It's right there.
I mean,
there
you do have to know
two.
What residential 1, 2, 3, 4 occupancies are, but.
No, because that's why I glossed over it, because I was like, I don't know what that is.
We can talk about it later.
Well, boarding houses and hotels and apartment buildings.
Yeah.
Because that's what it says.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, those are all the questions. I mean, do you have any other questions? Concerns?
Yeah. I have questions on the administrative review part. So is that always been, like in the past, if there is that type of review, it's all for a director?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay. So it's like, not like there is no various situation, like some are...
No, it's a separate permit process, but it's administratively approved by the director. So
I see.
It would be a an additional step, but usually done early and approved by the director.
And is it just curious, is it like always in-house review or some always?
As far as I know, yeah.
Thank you.
Are we, maybe this is more of a question for Andrew, maybe, are we looking at right-of-ways, right-of-way design as part of this, since we're removing it from private property and it goes to right-of-ways, but a lot of our right-of-ways, are like the major ones, are state routes as well, so we have some complications to that, but like we're trying to push the parking off of the street, but are we looking at the street itself?
Yeah, I mean, the development code's scope is really private property, and so we're not getting into the right-of-way aspect of things here, and I think that's part of the challenge. You know, as Steve mentioned, we heard from both council and from the commission when this was first discussed around like loading and curb management, and a lot of that is really management of the curb like in the right-of-way, and so how do we account for that? I think it's going to be an evolving topic as the city kind of grows and matures and population grows and areas become more dense, that, you know, the city take a more proactive role in how we're managing the curb and loading zones, but that's not really addressed within the development code anywhere, and nor is that really the place to be addressing that.
Okay. Commissioners, do you want to go through the strikeouts and adds? Are there other questions for Steve?
You've provided some clarifications, some questions that I'll come back hopefully with answers. And in addition, there's some parking related code in all the other sections of the development code. So should be just like cleanup stuff, like we wouldn't have to hopefully walk through, you know, definition type stuff and procedural 2030 and uses in 2040. So I imagine that'll be a lot of changes, but more administrative in nature.
Okay. Anyone else? Then that closes out our study item. Thank you. Moving on to unfinished business. Nope. How about new business? Still no. Reports and announcements. All right, Andrew, at some point you're going to say something. The agenda for the next meeting.
Yeah, so staff would propose that commission cancel the May 15th meeting, and then the next meeting would be on June 5th.
Okay. And then also we will be canceling the June 19th meeting as it is a holiday.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Then, seeing nothing else, the meeting is adjourned.